ball spark.
You want good words? Data Languager.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Kalk with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP!
Good Thursday morning out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to The Skinny on Sports, 98.1 FM, the Sports Animal. Glad to have you along for the next hour. Get into all kinds of different things. College football this weekend, Oklahoma State and Iowa State. It's pretty crazy how similar those two teams are with the way they play and also kind of their problems this year. Talk about that a little bit, and we'll break that down that game a lot more tomorrow. Man, did you see the crowds for the WNBA parade?
Yes, I did. Massive humanity.
It was awesome. There was more people on the fire trucks from the team than there was on the street for the players. That's got to be embarrassing for them, right? You think it embarrasses them when they're like, because then they had like a rally where they invited their ticket holders or whatever, and there was a few hundred to a thousand people there, let's just say, whatever it was. You know, that's all they need to do, right? Don't try to make it something it's not. The ratings were good, though. We'll talk about that.
You just described the WNBA in a nutshell.
Yeah.
And trying to make it something that it's not.
That's right. The ratings will bear that out, too. High school football starts tonight. The Elks down in Cache. Talk about that game. This hasn't been a very kind series for the Elks over the past 10. Didn't play last year because of COVID. Custer County conflicts this week. Speaking of not kind, this game to Weatherford most years. Huge game in 4A2. We've kind of started looking over at 4A2 to see what the matchups might look like in the first round of the playoffs. There's a big one there tomorrow night. And then down in A1, two big games with local teams. Merritt's got a big one with Thomas, and then Burns Flat, a must-win out at Sayre. Coming up on Friday, we'll talk about those. Thunder opened their season last night. Question on the table, will they win 20? MLB playoffs, both, let's see, what is it, 3-1 for the Braves, 3-2 now for the Astros. I know you were listening when you heard that story about the plane crash. What a crazy story that was. We'll talk about that a little bit. The Braves up 3-1 against the Dodgers. Trade deadline. You know why we pay attention to it so much? Because of things that can't happen, like what Atlanta did to totally rebuild their outfield. Got some crazy numbers with that.
Okay.
And then also, listen, I'm a little bit old school. I'm kind of the get-off-my-lawn guy. But that stance with in regards to how I feel about kind of the younger generation, it had to take a short break this morning with a story I heard from my son.
Oh, okay.
This is a good one.
Okay.
225-9698 is the phone or the text line. 225-9698. Give us a call. Shoot us a text. Tell you about those things. Whatever else might be on your mind, feel free to chime in at 225-9698. If you're going to be outside the listening area, there are a couple ways to stay in touch with the show. One of those is to log on to KADSAM.com. The other is download the Paragon Communications app. The app has all things Paragon with us right here on KADS. You got Cool 94 and KECO as well. Radio stations there. You got the Penny News. Check out this week's edition of the Penny News online. ThePennyNews.com. You can also go pick up a free copy of the Penny News. Filtering out everywhere right now. Your favorite newsstand has it. Go pick up a free copy of the Penny News. Big Elk TV or Paragon TV as well in the app. Big Elks down at Cache tonight if you can't make it down there. 6:30 pregame, 7 o'clock kick for the Elks and the Bulldogs. Then tomorrow night on ParagonTV.com, you've got Merritt traveling over to Thomas. Big game for the Oilers to stay in the Class A District 1 playoff hunt. Watch that one on Paragon TV. And then, oh, by the way, what are we, two weeks from basketball? I think it was 2 weeks Tuesday.
It was the second. We got a couple.
November 2nd, yeah. Yes. So 2 weeks, 2 weeks, on 2 weeks, 2 days ago, we've got basketball, high school basketball. Paragon TV is where you can check that out as well. Skinny on Sports Podcast, if you missed the show entirely, you can go back and listen to anything we might have said. And then some people text us and tell us how wrong we were 3 days later. It's fun.
Isn't that funny?
It's a fun existence.
Yeah.
But you can check that out on KADSAM.com. You can find it on iTunes as well. How are you, Jared?
I'm good. I'm real good.
Okay, so listen. We're sitting there getting ready for school today, getting ready for work today. And I just happened to see a video from, of all places, Boston, Massachusetts last night, which seems pretty libby with the political leanings. But it was a video of Alex Rodriguez after the game, the, like their post-game show.
Okay.
And the probably the most famous chant going around the country right now breaks out in Boston. FJB, I guess is the easiest way I can say it.
Yeah.
So I heard that and I started going, let's go, Brandon.
Yeah, exactly.
And Wyatt pops his head up from his room and he goes, hey, we were doing that on the bus yesterday.
Oh, my. No. Does he know?
He
doesn't know.
Well, here's what happened.
Is there a boy named Brandon on the bus?
No. One of his buddies did it real loud, and then a couple other ones did it, not knowing what it was, and then the one that started was like, hey, we're going to get in trouble.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Like, he did know, but the rest of them didn't. But, yeah, a couple rounds of Let's Go Brandon broke out on the bus headed home from school yesterday.
Oh,
so that
golly.
Was that reinforces my faith in the youngsters of this country, or at least of Sayre. I'm not going to take that all the way nationwide just yet, but at least in Sayre, Oklahoma, that reinforces my belief in the children. Yeah, with the Let's Go Brandon chant. That's pretty funny. Major League Baseball playoffs, man. Amazing how these the ALCS has completely flipped on its head over the past, 10 innings. Because you had Boston up 2-1 in the eighth inning of Game 4 with a 2-1 series lead. And Altuve hits a home run, then the seven-run ninth. All of a sudden, Houston wins that game. And then last night, just pounded on the Red Sox from the start. Win that game to take a 3-2 lead and also heading back to Houston. We can talk about the series a little bit, but that story that Jim told yesterday, it's weird because I had seen like the picture of the plane crash, but
right.
had not read the story whatsoever.
You'd think a plane crash like that, your thoughts immediately go to injuries and
death.
I mean, look at that. I mean, the thing was gutted and on fire, and you think, man, I feel sorry for, that was crazy. But nobody died. Everybody got off. Very minor injuries, as described.
Everybody got off?
They walked away.
Of the 21 people aboard, I think maybe it ended up being 24 with the flight crew.
Right.
Everyone got off, and oh, by the way, 12 of them, what they were doing was they were leaving Houston, headed to Boston for Game 4
right.
of the ALCS. And they never even take off. They try to take off in the chartered plane or whatever. It's a jet, a smaller jet. And they don't even get off the ground, and it starts skidding around and comes to a stop, and everyone gets off in time for it to burst into flames to the point where, most of the luggage wasn't able to be recovered. I mean, it's just done.
Yeah.
But so everybody gets off. All 21 plus the crew. But did that deter 12 of those Astro fans from going to Boston? Heck no. 12 of them leave the scene of that accident, of that plane crash, of that fiery ball of jet fuel, and persevere on to Fenway Park. That is just awesome. Fandom. Way to go.
Crazy.
It's just kind of filtering out, like, the story. We're going to know the story all the way through at some point here.
Yeah.
But, I mean, so, like, one of the guy that had actually chartered the flight, he was a big-time builder down there, home builder or whatever, just builder. So he's the one that had chartered the flight. I want to know how did they get there? Did he just call up at one of his buddies and say, hey, we just had some problems. Can we use your plane? Did he charter another one? Did they have to walk in, to Logan Airport and buy tickets on a commercial flight to Boston from Houston to get there? I want to know how that part of this story happened.
I'm going to guess because they're already chartering one plane, he went and chartered another.
figured out a way.
Had enough connections. Well, if you have connections to charter a plane, then he probably made a similar phone call. Go, listen, I need another plane.
Yeah, and if you're here, here's my question. I guess his name was something Allen. I can't remember. I looked it up when I heard his name. Is it kind of like renting a car?
Yeah.
If your first one blows up, surely you can just go back to like Enterprise and get another one, right?
Hey, Hertz, I need another car.
Yeah. So can that happen with planes?
Your first car did not do very well. I don't know.
Yeah.
When you charter, listen, I don't know. You don't know. We don't know because we're not millionaires at charter planes.
No.
But is that like a company you call? Hey, I like to charter a plane.
Well, you see like NetJets and that kind of thing.
Okay. Yeah. So did he call up the company? Hey, listen, your plane skidded off the runway. I need another.
You know what how I view this guy walking up to the counter of the plane rental place? Like Steve Martin on Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
That is exactly where I went.
I want a...
That's exactly where I went.
He just walked up, just exasperated like Steve Martin was. But anyway, I'd love to know how they got there, the 12 of them. And just the congratulations on the perseverance of making that trip. I mean,
to want to get back on a plane.
Well,
what?
But here's my thought though on that. I mean, you survived a plane crash. The odds are 1,000,000% in your favor that it ain't going to happen again.
Very
like,
true.
First off, that day it's astronomical. You probably can't even figure the odds on that one. But I mean, I think you're pretty well. There's certain things going around right now in our world that will help you stay healthy. I think surviving a plane crash, the efficacy that generates on all your other plane trips is 100% the rest of your life. You're good.
Yeah.
You're good. You're never going to, you survived one plane crash. You don't hear?
You're good.
People surviving two.
Right.
Partly because it's pretty hard to survive one. And I'm going to guess the other part is, you don't get into two plane crashes in your life.
No.
So once you make it out, once you stare death down and sidestep it and get off that plane, I think you're good for the rest of your life flying.
Yeah.
No reason to be worried.
You're not going
to
get struck by lightning twice. You're not going to win the lottery twice. You're not going to be in two plane crashes.
Don't tell the guy.
The odds are pretty good that you're not going to be in another plane crash. Don't tell who.
Don't tell that guy from the great outdoors that you can't get struck by lightning. I think his was 66 times in the head. But anyhow, that was an incredible story. And then for the 12 of them to jump right back on another plane and head to Boston.
Man, the Astros cheated
fantastic.
Baseball and they cheated.
Cheated death.
Cheated death.
12 of them, or 21 of them did anyhow. So the Astros lead by 3-2 count, headed back to Houston. I think both of us yesterday thought that was the series that probably had the best chance of making it to 7 games.
Yeah.
But I also think we both figured Boston was winning game 5.
That exactly.
In order for that to happen.
At home, you'd think so. But with the way that game played out, now this is just it's for Houston for the taking. Right?
But it had. That's right.
To close it out at home.
It has seemed like in these two series, about the time you think you have it figured out, it goes the other way.
Right.
So in the other one, Atlanta and the Dodgers. That was set up to be a Dodgers win. Atlanta had a bullpen game yesterday, as far as the pitching staff went, and man, they had guys step up. They kept on highlighting Drew Smyly throughout the game, 3 1/3 innings that he ate up. Out of the bullpen for the Braves. They scored early, led 5-0. Then all of a sudden it was 5-2, and you kind of had a little bit of a flashback to yesterday or the day before when the Dodgers came back from 5-2 to win, but it just didn't happen, and the Braves slammed the doors just completely shut in the top of the ninth, courtesy of Eddie Rosario. Got a little choked up there. Eddie Rosario's 3-run homer in the ninth inning that blew it all the way apart, 9-2. The Braves win. So now they're up 3-1. I think it's an interesting psychological discussion with this series and what happened last year with these exact same two teams. The Dodgers falling down 3-1, coming back to win that series 4-3. Now, the difference was all of that was played in front of basically nobody down in Arlington. This one, you got a home game, and then you got to go win two at Atlanta if you can win today. So it's a difference. It's the same situation, but totally different circumstances.
Yeah, it's a different dynamic. Now, Kershaw's not playing, right? Do you think that's a big reason why they're in a 3-1 hole or a 1-3 hole, depending on what side of fandom you are?
I mean, they're beat up, obviously, with Max Muncy not playing. Then last night, you saw the injury
Turner
as he tried to beat out the ball down the first baseline. I think a lot of things go into it. I mean, sure, it hurts not having Kershaw, but you know what? This is one of the reasons why everybody was so up in arms in game two when Dave Roberts brought in Julio Urias to relieve, because he was scheduled to start yesterday. That pushes everything back, and then he just didn't have it, you know? And so they tried to relieve him and then tried to start him, and that just became a bad deal. And so now today, when you look at the pitching matchups, you've got Max Fried going for the Braves, which is essentially their ace, and the Dodgers are in a bullpen game. So huge advantage here for the Braves. It's hard to win, you know, back to back, and I think Atlanta has a lot of the motivation as far as the, you know, when you think about revenge and getting back to the spot where you failed and playing the same, you know what I'm saying? I think a lot of those factors, the intangible factors, are in the favor of the Braves.
Yeah, you're right.
How about the trade deadline moves they made?
Now bring me up to speed on
Okay, so they start out the season. Their opening day lineup, the outfield for the Braves was Ronald Acuña, Marcell Ozuna, and Christian Pache. He was a huge prospect, kind of the next great thing. You know, you're shaking your head like, who are those guys?
Yeah.
Well, it's because none of them are playing anymore. So Acuña, everybody remembers when he got hurt. He's out for the season. Marcell Ozuna had an injury and then had the domestic violence allegations pop up as well. So he hasn't played since like May.
Right.
And then Pache at 111 and was sent back down to the minors. And so the Braves outfield is completely decimated. And at the deadline, they go to make moves, and they end up with Adam Duvall, Jock Peterson, and Eddie Rosario. You know those names.
Right.
Those guys, all they've done in the postseason in 101 plate appearances, hit .341, 6 home runs, 21 RBI in 8 playoff games they've done that combined. So a masterful job of transforming the Braves outfield by their front office in season. Just a crazy turnaround right there.
Yeah. You hear that about, you know, in season making big changes to your bullpen, stuff like that, you know, and your starters. But nothing like that. Nothing like totally rebuilding your outfield in the middle of the season.
Very rare.
Very rare.
Very rare. So, I mean, you know, sometimes, you know, you add a bat and that ends up mattering like that. But not
like a Gallo to New York.
No, yeah, just something one like move, that.
But to do what they did, yeah.
And one last thing on the baseball. You know what's crazy? Well, the Dodgers' payroll is hundreds of millions of dollars, right?
Right.
And maybe this goes back to what you were talking about with Kershaw, but think of this. Hundreds of billions of dollars worth of payroll, and they get to the most important game of the season, and they don't have a starter to run out there. Isn't that crazy?
That's a problem, yes.
It's just crazy.
Yes.
The way that's transpired. And, oh, by the way, not only do you not have a starter, but the team you're playing – in an elimination game, has their ace, who pitched, what did he throw, seven, let me go back, in game one. 6 innings, gave up 8 hits, 2 earned, struck out 5. And a lefty. You noticed last night, a lot of the bullpen guys for the Braves were lefties. The Dodgers have trouble there, or have had trouble there, throughout the season. 22 of the 27 outs were recorded by lefties out of the bullpen for the Braves last night. Dire straits if you're a Dodger fan, but it was this way last year too, and they figured out some way to come back and and win. Doesn't feel like it, though, does it?
No.
Doesn't it feel like today's the end?
Yep.
Just watching the way that game, the series has gone. I mean, to be quite frank, if they don't get a home run from Cody Bellinger, who hit 165 this year, serious. That thing's over last night.
Yeah, it's over.
Hey, Thunder opened the season last night. Is this Thunder season setting up to be kind of like if a tree falls in the woods and nobody hears it, did it really fall?
Yeah. I completely forgot they were playing when I was watching the Appalachian State upset Coastal Carolina, and then I saw a score flashed on the bottom. That's how inept I mean, I knew they were playing. Like, oh, yeah, they're playing. But I knew they would lose, and they lost. But I see what you're saying, yeah. It's we're in store for another long year.
There's only so much of, hey, let's see how Josh Giddey looks, or is Poku an NBA player, or there's only so much of that you can handle when you're just getting beat.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's one thing when you find those things out and you're like, hey, they're pretty, you know, and here's going to be the problem, I'm afraid. If you lose and it's like competitive fun games.
Yeah.
You can watch it and you can, oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're right. Almost there.
I mean, you have that, oh, what a perfect ending. We got beat 112 to 110, so it was competitive, it was fun to watch, and it was a loss. Yay, tanking, you know?
Yeah.
It's 107 to 86, not so much.
Nah. It's going to be a lot of that.
I think the one thing we're going to find out, and this is going to be a positive moving forward, but unfortunately maybe the other team's going to find this out too, and that's going to be, with the way this team is constructed and the youth that's on this team, we're going to find out if SGA is a true one, true alpha, or if he is Batman or if he's Robin. Because to this point in his career, he's kind of had some help, right?
Right.
He had CP. Then he had, you know what I mean? He's always kind of had somebody else, a veteran, you know, or what have you. That's not the case on this team.
No, he's the guy.
He is the guy.
And they made it clear that they're going to build this around him with how they extended him. I think that plays into a lot of how they've drafted the last couple of drafts, especially last year, last draft. So, yeah, he's the guy. But can he handle that? Can he be that? Are you asking me, can he handle the pressure?
I'm saying, is he good enough? Is he good enough to carry an organization?
We're about to find out.
I guess I messed up that old wives saying.
What's the old wives saying?
If a tree falls in the forest, did it make a sound? Not did it really fall?
Isn't it, if a tree falls
Did it make a sound?
And no one's around, did anybody hear it?
Yeah, I guess that's it.
Is that it? Somebody blowing up your phone because you messed up a quote?
Will.
A saying? Oh, Will.
Thanks, Will. Anyhow, I think we're going to find that out.
Will's our fact checker.
Well,
he's
as
on
good
top
as
of
any.
It. He's on top of it.
I saw something yesterday, and we don't need to get in those weeds.
Thanks for the tease.
We don't need to get in those weeds. Well, just go see what happened at the NIH yesterday that, trust me, you're not going to hear about on the news.
NIH.
The National Institute of Health.
Okay. I'm told we can't eat onions right now.
Yeah, I saw that too. Salmonella, and that's why we grow our own.
Good news for me, because I hate onions.
That's why we grow our own onions. Anyhow, there was a certain medication that was put on the good to combat COVID list that's been vilified in the media. Joe Rogan took it, and I think you figure out which one it is.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Anyway, it's on the list. Number two, the number two most effective one. Weird.
Wow.
Anyhow, so the Thunder, do you think they're going to win 20 games?
Oh, wow.
I mean, like the record
but it'll be tough.
The record for futility is 9, I think. Is that the worst ever record, 9-73? That's not going to happen.
No. Now, culture carries a lot.
Over-under was 22.5 or 23.
Well, I'll go over 20, yeah. I think, listen, culture carries a lot. And there is a culture in the Thunder organization of pride of winning. And they'll get some wins that they're not supposed to get some wins at. But it'll be tough.
I'm sorry, 7-59. Whew. Oh, my gosh. Charlotte.
Oh, okay.
In 2011, 2012. Matter
of
fact,
the first Charlotte Hornets?
I don't know. I saw that team play, actually. No. I saw 2012, 2013. They were bad, too. Yeah, I mean.
You see what I'm saying? There was 100%. Like last year, there's even time like, whoa, they're winning. They're too good. Slow down. Pump the brakes. You're not supposed to win. But sometimes you just can't shake that culture.
Yeah. I think it's true. And a lot of it on a night to night, and we may not notice it as much at the first of the season, but as it drags on, there's going to be times where they win a game or two just because they play harder than the other team.
Mm-hmm. And
that's the culture.
And another part of it is, how many times you've heard this, playing down to your competition.
Oh, sure.
Hard to get up for a team like the Thunder when they are what they are right now.
Here's the thing. They shot 35 threes last night. They're going to shoot a bunch of threes.
Yep.
There's going to be nights where they make them, and they're just going to win a game because they're shooting at such a high clip. It's not sustainable, but in a one-game scenario, it's going to happen. All right, high school football this weekend or this week. Tonight, the Elks down in Cache to take on the Bulldogs. This hasn't been a very good series for Elk City. Cash is 8-2 over the previous 10. Cash has won 5 in a row. These two didn't play last year. This is one of the games that was lost due to COVID. But watching a little bit of what I've watched, getting ready for this game, it does look like kind of one of those matchups where both teams want to run the football. And so far to the point in the season, the Elks have been able to do it successfully at a much higher rate than Cash. And both teams try to stop the run, and once again, the Elks have been better at that than what the Bulldogs have been so far. Now, that all that that's happened previous to tonight goes out the window, but this does feel like a game where Cash's strength mirrors Elk City's strength.
Yeah, it does. You've seen the film. I've seen a couple film on Cash. To me, Elk City's size is going to give them a bunch of problems. I mean, and that's been the story all year for Elk City. That's where they've had their success, is right there in the trenches. I think that is a key tonight because Cash, they don't look as big as they have in the past. Am I wrong?
Nah, it seems that way. I mean, you look at the size on the roster and you think, oh, yeah, here they are. And then you see on the film, and it may be different when you get there.
Yeah.
But it doesn't look like those numbers would match up. One thing that the Elks are going to have to be very, very good at defensively anyhow is the edge. You know, Cash is always kind of running those motions, those jet sweep motions, and just a lot of it sometimes is eye candy and it's a handoff up the middle, but sometimes it's also, you know, they give the ball, and so they're going to have to be able to keep things from getting outside. You know those guys, Cherry and Garrett Dye and those guys on the outside as the linebackers, setting that edge and funneling everything back into where the strength of the defense is coming from. I think that's huge. In this game, one thing I didn't see as much in the last two games as I saw earlier, and this is something that we've seen the Elks have a little bit of trouble with. To me, the best offensive guy they have, Cash has, is 44 Jalen Nido. He's the tight end. They really utilized him early, haven't as much lately, and I don't know if it's just a defense is a scheme to kind of try to take him away. But that's one guy, as all that motion and all that stuff is happening in the backfield, you could see kind of a play action, pop it right down the seam. And we've seen the Elks a little bit susceptible to some plays like that so far this season.
Yeah, and maybe the story's out. Maybe the secret's out on him. Because they, like you said, they had early success starting 2-0, and impressively, might I add, beating El Reno. El Reno, I haven't really followed them. I don't know where they're at, but they're one of the top 10 teams in 5A and destroying out this, but we know what out this is. But maybe the secret's out on him. And speaking to their schedule, listen, they're better than the 2-5, I think, tells you, because, I mean, they're within a touchdown. They lost by a touchdown at Bethany, which I think that was a kind of a close nip and tuck game throughout. And then a two touchdown loss to Newcastle. And I don't know what happened last week against Chickasha. It was close for a little bit, and then the rails came off. Did you watch that game in full?
Yeah, it was. Chickasha was ahead the whole time. And then at the end, They tried to had to try to throw it to catch up
to
and
catch up,
and Chickasha picked off two and scored.
I see.
That made you know, it was like so it was 28. Was it 28-26? Maybe
there was at one point. It was a 3-point or even
like, no. It was
like a 2-point or
30.
Yeah, it was a weird score.
No. You know what?
33-20.
No, it was 29. It was 29-20. Cash scored, made it 29-26.
Yeah, 2-point game.
And
yeah.
then they – no, it was a 3-point game.
Yeah, so at some point we –
they were going to go for two and maybe tie it. Anyway, they got a penalty on the 2-point, and then they had to kick the extra point. And that made it 28. I think that at that point it was maybe 30-28.
Yeah.
Because they were going for two – no, that's – anyway, 31, whatever it was. And then Chickasha scored, and it was 39-28. So maybe it was 31. They were going to go for anyway. Chickasha scored to make it 39-28.
It felt like that
Cash
score,
had to throw it, and two yeah. interceptions happened. And
53-28. The point is, it was closer than a 53-28. The way I felt when it was in the third quarter at that point.
Yeah, it was one of those that just felt like it was, you know, Chickasha was up two scores, then Cash would get it to one, and then Chickasha would score, then Cash. You know, they never even in that sequence I'm trying to remember, they couldn't tie it.
Yeah.
With a 2-point conversion, if I remember right, they couldn't tie it, but they when they got the penalty, they went in and kicked the extra point. But then from there, Chickasha reeled off like. Gosh, three touchdowns in a row, whatever the point total was, 20-something in a row to make that difference out to 53-28.
That has been what I've noticed Cash's problem are the turnovers. And with the way
especially
Elk
trying
City,
to throw it.
Yes, and the way Elk City played last week, that could fall right into their hands, quite literally.
But, you know, as we've seen and as anybody sees watching football, for teams that don't necessarily want to throw it all the time, their throw game is so much more effective when they can run it.
Yeah.
And so that's to where, you know, the Elks are going to have to – you know, I think Cash and quite frankly, Elk City's a lot like this too. If they play a game where you don't make them throw it, they're fine. They're fine with not. You know, they're fine with turning around and handing it off.
Right.
As long as you can't stop it, they're fine doing it. And the Elks are a lot that same way too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, eventually you can take advantage of successes you're having on the ground and take shots or whatever. But both of these teams are grounded and pounded, and if you can't stop it, then they're going to keep doing it over and over. And so, to me, you know, running the football is always a key for Elk City offensively. But then stopping the run tonight and some of those – just being disciplined with your eyes, I think, is a huge part of what's going to be able to be successful for the Elks. Another thing that I've noticed about Cash – their kickoff return game is very good.
Yeah, I've seen that too.
Very, very good. They took one back against Clinton. They had another one near the 50 against the Red Tornadoes. They took one long. I mean, they seem like they busted at least one long return every game. Andres Washington is number 6 is back there, as well as Tyler Harbin, number 11. Those are the two guys that it seems like have been the catalyst for that. So that's something. You know, I harp on it through every broadcast we do. It's such a weapon to have Nike and have him able to kick it into the end zone and eliminate all of that kind of stuff.
As far as the weather's concerned, no issues there.
I don't think so.
It's going to be
– it's switching. I think maybe overnight down there they may get some storms, but we'll be out of there.
Yeah, I think as I look it up, I know in our area it's going to be a nice night. It was a nice night last night. Those typical late October evenings, kind of cool. Let's see here. Thursday night, partly cloudy, 54, east breeze between 3 and 6.
Yeah,
so,
it's gonna. I'd say it's at some point the wind, it's out of the north to start. It's supposed to switch around to the southeast eventually. And so maybe, heck, by that time, it's not even there yet. It's still making its way around from the north to the south via the east. So, yeah, it should be a nice night.
That's good news. What I'm saying is that's good news
for
Nike and the special teams consistently put it in the end zone.
Yeah, that's such a huge thing.
Yeah.
Custer County conflict tomorrow night. Clinton's won 16 of the last 20 against Weatherford. I think this one is played at Southwestern.
It is. I checked.
I did too. And so, you know, we talked a little bit about it on Monday.
Which shocks me. They got a new turf on their, I guess.
I don't know if it's
accommodating the mass amount of people.
Yeah, I don't know where their reconstruction of the visitors' side is. know, because a lot of that,
as
got,
I recall,
a lot of that had to get taken down.
Weatherford guy told me that, so their visiting fans aren't done yet.
That's right, and so I think that's probably a big part of it and why it's going to be at Southwestern.
Okay.
The game itself, I mean, this would be a monumental upset. You know, anything can happen in a rivalry game is kind of the mantra of all that.
Sure.
This would be an absolute shocker if Weatherford was able to beat Clinton. Right? I mean, no matter what you say about the Custer County conflict and how crazy things happen, blah, 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 whatever, this would be as crazy a thing that's ever happened in that game with the way that these two teams have played this season coming into this game tomorrow night.
Yeah, it's just two teams and going in a different direction this season. Clinton, obviously 6-1, and they got great aspirations to get back to that title game. And then there's Weatherford, had success last couple of years, but it's a turn. We've mentioned it over and over this week, even last week going into our game with them. It's just a rebuilding year or a turnover year. It happens in 4A a lot where you got guys who graduate and move on from the program, and you got young guys, and that's what Weatherford's dealing with right now. And we saw the positives of their young guys. Nixon stands out. He's their leading receiver after looking it up.
Oh yeah.
No shocker there. He's going to be a good one, but right now they're just young and inexperienced. But it would be a shocker but you know what they got going for them, it is in Weatherford. Their backs are against the wall. Clinton might come in a little overconfident. Who knows? But the way Clinton's been running the football and the way Weatherford has had trouble stopping the run, I just don't see it.
Yeah, and the one thing that would worry you if you're a Weatherford fan was the rash of turnovers that a defense in Elk City created against you that hasn't been the strength like the defense of Clinton has been.
Yeah, Clinton plays some good defense.
And able to turn over. You know, that's the one thing about that cash game.
Yeah.
You know, a couple of turnovers and boom, it was, you know,
50 something. Go back and watch the end of that second quarter, Clinton and Cash. And
they ran an interception back with no time on the clock.
And virtually no blockers in front of that kid.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
We'll talk a lot about the Clinton team. I think I know how to beat them. Now, good luck doing it, but I think I know how to do it. Just watching their games. I think I know how to do it.
Okay.
But you got to be able to do it.
Well, Coach Meadows will be here today, so you can.
I think he's got this figured out too.
Okay.
Blanchard Cushing is a huge game in 4A too, to kind of decide that second spot.
Right.
If Cushing can win, that pretty well I think cements them there at two. Blanchard winning, then all of a sudden that sets up a Week 10 title game in 4A too between Tuttle and Blanchard. Cushing would be sitting there at third or fourth with Hera also, and I think Cushing's already beaten Hera. So that one would be the tiebreak there. Oh, nope, they haven't. Somebody at Tuttle beat here, I think. So, you know, then that would look further down the road at Cushing or Hera. But that'll be one of those that I know we'll have our eyes on, thinking about the second or third spot and who that would be later on in the playoffs. Class A District 1, Merritt goes to Thomas. It's a huge game. You've got those four teams tied with one win in the district, and they all kind of start playing each other here the last few weeks, and this is the first one of those games with Merritt and Thomas both with one win. A loss essentially eliminates one of these teams. You're going to have to win these games against the others to set yourself up for tie-breaking possibilities. So the winner continues on down the stretch. The loser of this one joins Sayers, the teams that we know aren't going to be able to make it to the playoffs.
It just feels like this was going to be a really, really close game because the way Merritt's been playing, even in losses, you know, the Texoma loss by a point. Of course, they beat Sayre, and then losing to Moreland by 2 points. It feels like they're playing a better brand of football at the right time to maybe put themselves in a good position to get that playoff spot. But it's always Thomas, man. I mean, it's going to be tough to go there and win. And Thomas, too, coming off their first win of the year. But and their losses, by indication of their score, it doesn't even look like they're even close to being competitive.
Yeah, when you look at the different scores, especially the Hooker and the Moreland scores between how Thomas played them and how Merritt played them,
Yeah. You
would assume that Merritt would have the upper hand here because, you know, Hooker was 54-14 loss for Thomas and then 45-19 to Moreland. Merritt played both of those teams close, only 20-point loss to Hooker instead of 50. And then 2-point loss last week, going for two to tie it in the fourth quarter against Moreland. So, you know, but we all know that transitive property doesn't always come over when the teams play each other. And then also for Burns Flat Dill City, they're one of those four teams tied with the win in the district. They go to Sayre tomorrow night. It's a must win. I mean, the bottom line is, if you're one of these teams still left with Sarah on your schedule, that's a game you have to win. You cannot lose to Sarah.
Is this a rivalry game?
And expect to make the playoffs. I have no idea.
I got a great name for it.
Oh, dear. It's going to be something about Eagles.
Yeah, the Battle of the Birds.
That one's not as good as the Battle for Beckham.
No, I know. I'm trying.
Going to have to work on your naming.
Seeing what sticks, you know, throwing spaghetti at the wall. But, no, it's going to be a big game for both those teams because Burns Flat coming in a little flat.
And see, Burns Flat gets Sayre, and then they get Thomas and Merritt to finish.
See that?
So they're in a good spot.
They're in a good spot, too.
To finish up with four wins. And if that's the
case. Burns Flat Merritt at the end of the year could be pretty big.
It could be for a spot in the playoffs. Texoma's still kind of lurking there. They've got Hooker this week. You know, that's a game there. If Texoma or if Merritt could figure out a way to upset Fair, you know, one of the teams either, you know, beating each other is obviously a big deal. But if one of them can figure out a way to win against one of the top three, that would be a huge boost to what the record's going to be at the end. And on the negative side, if one of these teams, meaning Merritt, Burns Flat, Texoma, or Thomas, that still have Sayre left on their schedule and figure out a way to lose to Sayre, that's going to be what knocks them out.
Yeah.
You know, so it's going to be really interesting as we move along here the last three games of the high school football season.
Yep.
Okay.
Winding down week 8. Are you kidding me? We are.
It's hard to believe, isn't it?
Flying through it. Yeah, we'll keep a real. I mean, that's Cushing and Blanchard. That one's going to determine where we're eating. First round of playoffs.
Yeah, very well. Very well could. Don't forget, just a couple of days left to make your picks in this week's 10-game schedule of the Western Oklahoma Realty College Pick'em Contest. I've had multiple people text me saying, man, these are hard. This week's harder.
This week is hard.
So don't forget to make your picks before Saturday at 11 o'clock when the kickoff between Wake Forest and Army. Also, Cincinnati and Navy both kick off at 11. So before that time on Saturday, you got to make your picks in the Western Oklahoma Realty College Pick 'em. Thank you to Tyler Harrison, Robbie Allen, and all the gang down there at Western Oklahoma Realty. People before property is their motto. All right, so Iowa State, Oklahoma State coming up on Saturday. Probably, if not this one, one of the two or three biggest games in the country there in Ames. It strikes me how similar these teams are. Both want to win with defense. Both want to win with running game. And both have quarterbacks that have shown out at times and not shown up at other times with vital mistakes in big games. This one is going to be kind of a good-on-good type
Isn't that crazy? Both quarterbacks play bad in big games, and this is a big game.
Yeah.
Who's going to play bad?
Or who might not
who makes
play
the, who
horrible?
Who makes the least mistakes? You know what I mean? But, yeah, you're right. I think it starts with the running game. OSU's found their running back. And, of course, we all know about Iowa State's. I think that's where it all begins. And that favors Oklahoma State, in my opinion, because they can defend it pretty good.
Who do you think has the better defense?
Am I a homer if I say Oklahoma State?
Not necessarily. I think most people would say Oklahoma State.
I thought they played phenomenal defense against Texas, especially in the second half, especially the fourth quarter, and especially against Robinson. What was his final line? Let's check that one out. It wasn't as, you know, groundbreaking as some would think. But I think Oklahoma State does. I think they play a more well-rounded defense.
Well, there's a point there in the first half where I thought they were, according to Joel and Gus, they were just going to bring the Heisman out and present it to him at halftime.
Don't you love how that
– to Bijan. He had 21 carries, 135, and 2 touchdowns. Okay. He also caught 3 for 38 and scored. That's a pretty good day.
I mean, not a bad
but
day.
But a bunch of that happened in the first half.
Yeah, I'd like to break that down, first half versus second half.
Oklahoma State has dominated this series, by the way.
Yeah, they have.
Dating back to, you know, everybody remembers what happened in 2011.
By the way, Jaylen Warren outgained Robinson.
That crazy finish in that 2011 season, the only loss OSU had all year. It's up in Ames on a Friday night. Since that game, Iowa State's only won once. And that's when 2011 is kind of a good measuring stick, because that's when they started playing every year.
Yeah.
So since then, let's see, 2 to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I thought it was 8 because that's 10 years. 8-2 over the previous 10 for OSU, and have won 8 of the last 9. You know the one they lost? 2018. You know what's significant about that?
No.
Brock Purdy came in 10 plays into that game.
Oh.
And it's been the starting quarterback ever since for Iowa State.
That's when he
burst onto the scene. 48-42 win in Stillwater. But the last 2 years, OSU has been able to corral them and win the game both years. So I think it's going to be, golly, first to 20 wins?
Yeah.
Without major turnovers, right? I mean, turnovers always skew different things.
It goes back to who makes the least mistakes.
And there's, you know, it's, gosh, if you're either one of these coaches, we've seen Gundy already kind of submit to this philosophy. And that is, I don't trust Mr. Sanders. Do not, whatever you do under any circumstances, do not let him beat us.
Right.
Which is interesting because he's your quarterback. You know what I mean? But there's no doubt that he is submitted to that philosophy. We're going to play defense, we're going to run the football, and we're going to see how that shakes out. And it really feels like that's probably what Matt Campbell will do too. This may be the fastest game of the year.
Yeah.
Just time-wise. I mean, this puppy may be a three-hour game, which is unheard of in college football anymore.
Over-under's 47. You taking the under?
Pooh, I bet that's the only reason it scares you is because can't you see both of these dudes throwing a pick six and screwing that completely up?
Yeah.
Like the offense is – can't you see the offense is scoring like 35, but then they both do something stupid and cause, you know, an extra 14 to go on the board and then it goes over?
I see it, the score, either way, Iowa State or Oklahoma State – I see it being something like 23-17.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, like 20-17 or something like that. Yeah. Which
so
is under.
Definitely take the under.
But you're also taking into account that the quarterbacks
right.
aren't going to mess it up.
There could be a –
because can't you see it being 27-24 because one turnover led to a short field and the other one they took it back?
Yeah.
And then you're going, oh, my gosh, this game was destined to be under. Or 24-21, and it should have been 17-10 or whatever, right. You know, 17-14. But
some late game mistake and that seals the win for the other team.
Yes, yeah. Or you know, just any time. But both it does seem like both of us are kind of leaning toward keeping Oklahoma State inside that number, which is 7.
Yeah. That's such a big.
That's what
spread to
if me. I was an OSU fan, that would be the most worrisome thing in this whole game.
I'm not upset that Iowa State's favorite. I'm just upset by how much they're favored. I would figure they'd be favored by like 3, 3.5. Not a full touchdown.
Yeah, that's what scares me if you're an OSU fan. Dudes in the desert. Of course, they clearly underestimated OSU last week, making them about the same underdog at Texas.
Mm-hmm.
I know OSU was able to win that one. I think it's just the way it's happened. You could see it go. You can see a bunch of the games they played going the other way, but it hasn't happened. They've been able to find ways to win. Did you see the parade? Let's finish with this. Did you see the WNBA parade?
I did.
Let me ask you a question. Which events had more people at them? The WNBA parade yesterday or any Joe Biden rally in 2020?
Ooh. I would have to go with the rallies. The rallies. Anyone.
I think the –
anybody do a head count on
I think
parade?
I think the rally after the parade, did you see pictures of that? There was hundreds of people there, maybe 1,000, maybe thousands. There was clearly more there than at any rally that Joe ever had. But as far as just the parade, I'm afraid it might have been – Joe. Oh, Elk City JV game had more. we're going to get some good ones. May need to carry this topic over till
tomorrow.
Listen,
I got so many comments to make about this topic, but I'm afraid to.
By the way, the game 4 didn't quite find a way to beat the soccer pregame show in the ratings.
Oh, wow.
They average 540,000 viewers per game.
Good night.
You know, the only people that are jealous about that many watching? CNN. Big Elks tonight.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered to right. Way.